It's Let's Talk Legal on the Talk Station, FM 107.1. And joining us this afternoon, we have Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins. And as always, to remind you, please do not hesitate to give them a call, a 252 area code, by the way, 726-9050, or you can go to their website, harvellandcollins.com. Again, as I like to remind folks, spell out the word and, harvellandcollins.com. And with that introduction, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, Lockwood. Yes, sir. Good afternoon. Lockwood, Wes and I always enjoy being with you. This afternoon, Lockwood, we're going to talk about minority shareholders and or minority interest even in potentially an LLC. We've spoken before about the fact that there are several different types of corporate entities, and they all kind of get put in the same box. But there are S corporations, there are C corporations, there are nonprofit corporations, and then, yes, there's combinations of limited liability companies. These all are in a category known as, you know, doing business, if you will, under the auspices of a entity that is registered with the Secretary of State. It does require annual reporting and annual fees with the Secretary of State. And Wes and I want to take a moment and remind our listeners of that. We are very much in the process at our office right now. We actually are about done with it. Here as we approach into November, we always are updating our in-house corporations that we represent, that we maintain their corporate minute book, our LLCs that are good clients that have us maintain and do annual minutes for them. And we're in the process of doing these because we always want our corporate entities to walk and talk like a corporation, Lockwood. The purpose many times of these entities can be tax-driven, it can be organizational, but many times it's to limit the liability of the underlying owners. And if the owners of the underlying company expect to have their liability limited, then they are going to have to maintain and perform these rudimentary annual duties, which are filing their forms with the Secretary of State and maintaining some sort of annual documentation that they have met and they have affirmed the officers of the corporation, the board of directors, just in general walking and talking like a business versus continuing to act as an individual. So we are very busy at our office updating all of these. We charge a very nominal fee to do it. We prepare these minutes, if you will, Lockwood. We send them out to our clients at their known address. They sign them at the kitchen table. They send them back. It happens kind of very easily. It's not a difficult thing to do, but it's a very important aspect of acting and like a corporation. Now, when we're a corporation, we have shareholders, and Wes is going to chime in here a minute about the fact what happens when there's a minority shareholder, which many times there is. Let's face it, even if there are three children who have inherited the business, that's a third, a third, and a third. Sometimes we have 25% owners in the business, 20% owners. We can have any percentage ownership in the business, in the corporation. And so this individual becomes what in the law is known as a minority shareholder. And now all of a sudden, there is a problem in the corporation, and the minority shareholder needs to act and seeks advice from our law firm as to what they can do because they are very concerned with the activities of the corporation. Usually it's financial, of course, but they are concerned about the day-to-day operations of the business, the financial operations of the business, and yet they are only a minority shareholder. So with all of this said, let's let Mr. Collins talk to us a little bit about a few cases he has in the office that are in this that are these facts.
Wes?
Right. Sure. So most people know, Lockwood, that when you're making a decision with regard to a corporation or an LLC or one of these corporate type entities, then people kind of know that I'd like to have at least 51%. I might hear that all the time, mm-hmm. which is correct, because the vote of the majority, which obviously if we have 100% is the total amount of the issuance of the shares as far as the shareholders go, or members in an LLC, the 51% is going to carry the day with regard to decision making, whether that be appointment of board members or issuance of dividends or making disbursements of rental income, if it's like a like Cecil said, a third, maybe rental house that was inherited in an LLC or a corporation. The majority interest being 51%, they are going to have that control and be able to outvote any other mm-hmm. Members or shareholders of the entity. So, but what happens, when you have these minority shareholders, and like Cecil said, let's say you have a third, and the two-thirds, two of the three don't really treat the one-third that well. They don't disperse the money consistent with equitably and basically evenly as it relates to how the assets of the corporation or the LLC are shared. Then what does that minority do? Because the minority, Lockwood, is not in a position where we can go outvote the others.
Right.
Well, there's just certain laws in place that protect the minors. We've talked about the term fiduciary, mm-hmm. and when I say minors, I mean the minor ownership. The fiduciary is, in this situation, would be that the shareholders are fiduciaries to each other, and there's a duty of majority shareholders to the minority shareholders. This could be a third interest. This could be a 10% owner in a restaurant business, or a 40% owner in a restaurant business, or any type of business.
Right.
They own rental property together. Could be, a larger business. There's multiple cases in North Carolina that deal with this issue. One case in particular is a local case that dealt with an insurance company, and it ended up being a third situation where the three siblings inherited the insurance company, and the insurance company did very well. Well, you had two of the siblings who did the majority of the work in the business, one in particular, and the one sibling that was really they just inherited the one-third ownership interest, but really didn't contribute much to the business at all. A lawsuit was brought. This is in the North Carolina Business Court. And basically, the contentions in that lawsuit were that, hey, I'm a minority shareholder. This was brought by the person who wasn't that involved, the one-third sibling mm-hmm. that wasn't involved. And brother and sister, you guys are not distributing the money to me fairly. You're not treating me as an owner. And you're actually manipulating the business in a way to make it look like you are, by paying yourselves more
right.
and distributing less.
Mm-hmm.
So there was some monkey business with regard to income being paid out and in lieu of dividend disbursement.
Right.
So this is just one of many cases, and basically what happened, with this case is that this was established very clearly that there's a fiduciary duty of the majority shareholders, the two working together, kind of working together to benefit themselves against the other one-third, basically the one-third minority owner to put it very generally, you know, won that lawsuit. And it's reported in the North Carolina Business Court. It doesn't go into detail about, you know, how much she recovered and that type of thing. But it just lays out very clearly that, you know, in North Carolina, as a minority shareholder, you are owed a fiduciary duty by your majority owners, because the majority, basically, Lockwood, run the show. They can't basically run the show to your demise.
Okay.
They have to act in good faith. They have to act fairly to all the shareholders. So that's just, you know, for folks listening, you know, out there on the radio program, you know, sometimes people feel like, well, you know, I own a portion of this business, but I'm just not being treated fairly with regard to it. But, you know, I can't do much about that because I only own 20%, for example.
Right.
Well, that's really not true. And so that kind of takes us to the point of, okay, well, how do you really figure out what's going on with the business? I just feel like I'm not being treated fairly, but the majority won't really tell me much.
You know,
they don't share financial records with me. They don't invite me to meetings. You know, I don't even know how much money we're making. I'm not really sure where the money goes. Well, there are provisions in the North Carolina General Statutes that allow minority shareholders to properly request information regarding all types of things involving the LLC or the corporation, including, you know, financial statements, financial records, tax records. So you can get a clear picture. You just have to make a proper demand for it. You know, if you write an email and say, hey, give me some records, that's not really going to get you there. There's specific requirements that are met with regard to that, and that would be something that I would recommend a lawyer, you know, do for you. And in the event that the board or the majority shareholders don't produce that information, then the statute allows the requesting party, as long as the request is proper and it's done under the detailed requirements of the statute, then it allows you to file an action, a lawsuit, to require the majority shareholders to provide the information, and it allows you to get your attorney's fees for them providing it voluntarily.
You know, at the opening of the program, Cecil, you brought up the topic of shareholders' annual reports. And I'm thinking that in the cases of LLCs or any corporation, there normally is some sort of foundational document. Would that be something that any participant in a company, be it a C Corp, S Corp, LLC, nonprofit, that they should first look at to make sure that the documents clearly mark out the responsibilities of all the shareholders? I'm just wondering if that's something that would initiate a if you will, a red flag for you as an attorney if you're looking at the foundational documents.
Right. Well, if we're in the process of looking at the rights of a minority shareholder, for example, then one of the things that you're entitled to get, and the bylaws are not going to be necessarily available if through public record. I mean, normally you're not recording bylaws in, say, example, the Register of Deeds. You don't normally record or file them with the Secretary of State. You do normally file the articles of incorporation. So that's kind of the starting document for the corporation. And articles of organization is the same thing for an LLC. So the foundational document would be bylaws for a corporation or an operating agreement for an LLC.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there may be language in either one of those two documents that is beneficial or certainly needed in order to determine, you know, how the corporation or the LLC is supposed to operate. But notwithstanding that document, those documents, the majority shareholders always have a fiduciary duty to the minority.
Right.
So you can't have bylaws that say, you know, we have no fiduciary duty to our minority. I mean, that's not enforceable.
Okay.
So you always have that duty to treat them fairly and in good faith.
That goes into that category, Lockwood. I'm going to go off on a bit of a tangent, but it's always nice to talk about legal history, philosophy of law issues. When things are against public policy, you mm-hmm. see, that would be what Wes is referring to there would be that if there were a covenant or a provision in bylaws and or operating agreements that gives that completely forbids a minority shareholder or minority owner from asserting their ownership, then that would be against public policy. That's similar to the husband who comes in my office and's been married for 30 years and says, I really don't want to leave my wife anything in my estate planning documents. Mm-hmm. She doesn't need it. She doesn't deserve it. Just give it all to my children. But we've been married for 30 years, by the way, Mr. Harvell. Guess what, Lockwood? We've got some public policy issues out there that the North Carolina legislature deems applicable that are going to have to be talked about. So there are these hard stops. Maybe we call them that. There are these hard stops in the law where the law just simply puts its foot down and right. says, even though you may want to contract your right of way as a minority shareholder or as a majority contract the rights away of minority shareholders, we here are not going to allow you to do that. Wow. We find it to be against public policy. We're not going to allow you to disinherit your spouse, by the way. Yeah. We find that to be against public policy.
Fascinating. All right. We're talking, that was Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins. Just to remind you, we're talking about the issue of basically the minority shareholders, the rights and the privileges of a minority shareholder, but also the opportunities for minority shareholders or owners to, if you will, right the ship. Wes, Cecil, the question then goes to a situation of identifying the discrepancies. Is that always, granted, it looks like you could find it, but there are probably situations where all of a sudden the minority or the majority shareholders are saying, wait a second, look at the number of hours we're putting into our endeavor, that sort of thing. That sounds to me like it's a difficult, basically a difficult thing to prove. Your thoughts?
Well, normally where there's smoke, there's fire. So this is just like in all these type situations we deal with on a daily basis at Harvell and Collins, where we represent a client, and the client thinks that there's something going on. Someone is doing something. Someone is taking advantage of mom or dad. Someone is misusing assets. Same thing holds true with regard to, your co-owners of a business.
Right.
If you're being blocked out and we make a good faith request for the appropriate information for you, so that we can have a clear picture as to how things have operated. And in the context of a, elderly person, how their assets are being used, then obviously we're going to ask for bank statements. We're going to ask for credit card statements. We're going to ask for every account that the person holds, so we can get a clear picture from the third party, being the bank or the credit card company, as to how assets are being used. So, and same thing with the corporation. If we're not being given access to the corporate bank account or the tax records or financial statements, then we make a good faith request for that information. And in the event that there is that information is not forthcoming, then normally that is going to indicate that something is in fact
going on.
Yeah. Because otherwise, we know what to ask for.
Mm-hmm.
We know what documents to look for, and we know what documents, what records are going to show whether or not there is some type of malfeasance going on. And in the event that those are not forthcoming, then there's usually not a good explanation as to why, other than I don't want to give them to you without this. They're not going to say this, right. But I don't want to give them to you because I don't want you to see what I've been doing. you know, like I said, in a corporation or LLC context, you have statutes that protect you with regard to being a minority shareholder to get that information. But, you know, in the event that a lawsuit is filed, then you have even further tools in your toolbox under the North Carolina rules of civil procedure and the right to subpoena records and conduct discovery. So there's more that you can do to get even more information, you know, once the lawsuit, you know, is filed, in the event that that's the way we go with it.
All right, you said one other interesting aspect of this, that in the case of a lawsuit involving a minority shareholder and the failure, if you will, on the part of the majority owners to adequately provide fiduciary responsibility and proper and equitable distribution, that the legal fees would also accrue to the loser in that case. Is that correct?
Well, what I stated was referring to the particular statute that allows a shareholder or a member of an LLC to get certain documents if a proper request is made to the LLC or to the corporation through their board of directors or through the officers or the majority shareholders, then if there's not a production of what we requested for, as long as our request is consistent with what's required under the statute, mm-hmm. then you have the right then to file an action in court. It's basically an action for production of corporate documents and records. And if you have to go do that, and you have to go through that process, then what comes along with that is a motion for recovery of attorney's fees as well, because if they don't provide the information that you've rightly requested under the statute without you having to file that action, but you have to do that, and you have to go that far, you know, once you file that action, wow, in court, then basically you just have a motion before a superior court judge. The judge looks at it, and the judge is probably going to order the production of whatever's being requested, as long as you request things that are under the statute. And then that's the first part of it. And then the second part of it is the judge is going to award your attorney's fees that you've incurred and review an affidavit of what those attorney's fees are to make a determination as to whether they're reasonable. And so that's an incentive there for the corporations or the LLCs to go ahead and produce what you have to produce, so you don't potentially have to go to court and get popped for attorney's fees.
But, you know, that's an important...
It's kind of an automatic thing, Lockwood. If you don't produce it, well, fine. The next step is we're just going to go to court and you're going to have to pay for it.
That's an important issue here. For the benefit of minority owners, many times they are probably not adequately financed to warrant, you know, a great deal of... if you will, legal expense. That's a big incentive not only for the providers of the information, but even a worthwhile incentive for the minority owner to say, okay, I do have recourse. I think that's an important aspect of this.
Well, it's a recognition that a minority is a minority.
Right.
and therefore your rights are limited, but you do have these rights we talked about today. But you don't even know really exactly where you stand in the corporation or the LLC until you get the information.
Right.
And you should be entitled to the information, but if for some reason that the corporation or the LLC is not giving it to you, then you shouldn't have to go come out of your own pocket to pay an attorney to go get things that you should otherwise be entitled to. So there's just a recognition that, hey, if you're going to be so brazen, corporation, LLC, majority, as to not even provide basic documents so this minority can see what's going on, and this minority has to go to court to get those, you're going to have to pay their attorney's fees too. It's an incentive both ways to produce the records so you don't have to go to court, and it also protects the rights of the minority. It avoids the possible deterrent of the expense. Mm-hmm. Of having to go to court to get that, because it shifts that expense over to the other side.
And it's an incentive for the other side to go ahead and produce. That's a valid point. We're talking about corporations. In the case of a partnership, is there similar access to information? I mean, I'm wondering, is there a difference between a partnership, just a general partnership, versus a corporation in this case?
Yes, there is. Partnerships are much more limited in how the statutes will protect you.
Okay.
There's not as many of these protections under our North Carolina general statutes for partnerships as there is for corporations and LLCs as it relates to, you know, minority owners. So partnership, there are partnership statutes, but the partnership statutes are, I would say, they're more geared toward, you know, kind of old common law, as opposed to the detailed things I've gotten into today with regard to protecting minority owners, and also the statutory rights for the corporations and LLCs, you know, to be able to get that information. So that also, I mean, I like to see, frankly, my clients when they're operating a business, I like to see that organized either in a corporation or LLC as opposed to a partnership context. Because, again, there's protections there that you don't get to the fullest extent when you're just operating under a partnership.
In the case of a partnership, is there a similar situation related to minutes and things of that nature? Or is that, again, just not as...
No. Relaxed.
Far more relaxed. Okay.
Very much relaxed. But again, it's relaxed, and that might sound good, but it's not good in all contexts. Being a minority partner is not a good place to be. If you're in a partnership, and it's just a partnership, if you're a majority, then you have control. If you're 50-50, well, you have the right, you know, to require dissolution in the event you don't agree with what's being done through the other partner. But then sometimes when we're talking about a partnership, it's just a handshake deal.
Right.
And, you know, there might even be an argument as to whether there is, in fact, a partnership.
Uh-huh.
So once you get it formalized and you file your appropriate documentation as an LLC or a corporation, you know, then you can kind of cut through some of the argument, and then the North Carolina general statutes and the precedent with regard to how corporations and LLC applies, and then, you know, you're just getting the benefit of it being more formalized.
There are a lot of older partnerships that have been moving along over the years. I'm sure there are partnerships that are probably 20, 30, 40 years old. The changes in the or LLCs, the corporations, the S-corps, things of this nature, is that relatively new, or is that something that's just been around for a long time, but partnerships have just been developed out of convenience? What's the thought on that? And can partnerships be easily transitioned into an LLC or an S-corp, something of that nature?
Well, as far as the partners making the decision to organize their partnership as a corporation or an LLC, sure.
Okay.
If they decide, hey, let's go ahead and set up a corporation, ABC Corporation or whatever it may be, and transfer our assets into that and start operating as a corporation as opposed to a partnership, that's fine. If you have one of the partners, for example, who doesn't want to do that, then that may not work out.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly whatever the group wants to do is fine. As far as the history of corporations and LLCs, not new at all, but this comes back to this theory and this thing that we say quite often in cases and situations that we see. Everything is fine until it's not.
Right. Right.
So if you're in a partnership and you've never been sued before, the partners have always gotten along, there's transparency with regard to the records, you treat each other fairly, it's, you know, kind of rocking along and everybody sees how everything goes. You've never had a partner die. You've never had a partner decide they're not going to contribute anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You never had any of these problems. Well, there's no issue. But when there is an issue, then we have to look at how are we organized.
Right.
We have to look at, do we have a shareholder agreement, you know, or a partnership agreement? How does that operate? How about our bylaws? You know, what happens you know, if we have one of our owners pass away. Well, they've got an interest in our in the business, and that's an asset of that partner's or shareholder's estate. How do we potentially, depending on the language, how do we value that? You know, there's lots of things that come up, and then when these things come up, as I say, everything's fine until it's not.
Right.
Then we have to go back to how we got organized from the beginning or prior to the issue coming up. And in the event there's some kind of dispute and maybe people dig in, then the law is going to, you know, control that to a resolution. And we just, you know, it's a little bit willy-nilly if it's a partnership, can be, and there's less opportunity for there being issues, problems, disputes if you're organized properly in an LLC or in a corporation.
I'm walking away as we close out the program with that thought, Wes. And again, we're talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins, and that's Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins. And that is, there are some probably old partnerships out there that people have forgotten about or just taken into consideration, just thought that they just do it on an annual basis and not worry about it. But possibly the need right now is to look at that and maybe make a phone call. 252 area code 726-9050. Or as I like to remind you, go online to harvellandcollins.com. Spell out the word and, harvellandcollins.com. And making a phone call is not a difficult thing to do and get good advice from Harvell and Collins. And with that, Cecil, Wes, thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you, Lockwood.